Welcome to The Vinyl Preacher, your weekly podcast where we talk about the Bible, make a playlist, and do introductions. I'm Matt Cadle, pastor at St. Mark's Lutheran Church in Los Angeles, California.
And I'm Zach Pierce. I'm pastor of Lutheran Campus Ministry at the University of Colorado, Boulder, founded in 1876 on the centennial of this great country.
Centennial State.
That's right. It's one of the most boring state nicknames, and we've got it, Matt.
Golden State. It's tough to beat Golden State.
It is tough to beat Golden State.
Golden State feels like it should be a sequel to that Zach Braff movie.
I think so. You know, I'm not sure. I haven't spent much time in New Jersey outside of the airport or Newark, but I didn't see that many gardens.
Not many gardens.
What a film, Matt. That movie is probably... It did change my life, for sure. I don't know. It's in the top five of, like, high-impact movies for me. It probably is number one.
It's pretty emo. I mean...
It's all about depression, and it came out right when I was getting my first real good taste of that stuff. And it was a movie that demonstrated, that pulled back the curtain, revealed this new world to me in which I would have to spend the rest of my life.
Also the
and
Shins.
And Natalie Portman.
Peak Shins.
I have the soundtrack. Had the soundtrack. Was stolen out of my truck.
Natalie Portman, soon to be Thor.
Mm-hmm. She's going to be Thor?
She's going to be Thor. Jane Foster becomes Thor. It's going to be incredible. I know you're invested.
I thought the Incredibles were something different.
What happened to Zach Braff? I mean, like, he was about his moment, you know, mid-aughts there. What happened? Where is he?
He was riding high. He was riding so high when Garden State was coming out. And that's the same time. It coincided with the reign of Scrubs that we... together had a really formative, especially Friend of the Pod Adam, who used to, like, man, on DVD we'd tear through those things.
yeah binge watching before streaming.
Take to have in seminary in the aughts was you watch Scrubs and you're like, where is the chaplain?
it's true.
That was the seminary and hot take on Scrubs. Very clever.
True. Definitely true. It also meant that my friends who were in medical school, I would say, so what season of Scrubs are you in now? Like, what? And they would... That was how I would understand what they were up to.
They appreciated that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Look, we relate to one another.
Just classic stuff. Do you have that soundtrack on vinyl?
Oh, that would be really good.
This is my problem now, is that...
There's a lot of stuff to buy.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stuff to buy. It's like, oh, I need a new... Oh, that one. I wonder if that's on... And then I Google and I go, oh, okay. And I'm like, I need to set a budget. Like, this is going to be bad. I feel like this is going to be bad.
I went, Matt... I was in my fields this weekend, and I went to my local used record store, vintage shop. It's not... It kind of pitches... It's got a little bit of everything. And because I had a gift card from a couple hundred years ago, and everything in the store, if you're not buying vinyl, is about $8... It's either $2 or $8 trillion. Like, there's not, like, much middle ground, you know? And I had a $50 gift card. And, like, they had a typewriter. Like, I want a typewriter, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I would like a typewriter. But, like, they've got one. It's $200. I'm not paying $200 for an old typewriter. But now that the stereo is back up in business, I took my gift card and bought a bunch of used vinyl. And, you know, just bought up and down Laurel Canyon. I got the Byrds. I got Buffalo Springfield. I got Jackson Browne. Really, the Turtles. All kinds of good stuff there. But the thing I thought I would tell you about, Matt, is they also have old books. And someone was really interested in an item that they had at the counter. And it was $700. For a signed edition of Atlas Shrugged. And
what?
If I didn't have my mask on, I would have made several very snarky comments about destroying the book or reporting the person who bought the book, who paid $700 for that, to Homeland Security.
Did they actually buy it?
No, they were into it though. And they were like so excited to talk about it. Somebody's going to buy it for $700 and that person should be on a government watch list.
Wow. Well, you're doing the smart thing, which is buying the vintage vinyl. I got a couple of new copies. Two trends in vinyl. It seems like I ordered two albums that my dad really loved.
Yeah.
So
did you get the Muppets on vinyl?
I did not. I started to look into it, but haven't gotten there yet. I got James Taylor's Greatest Hits. Mm. 180 gram vinyl, which is like a thing. It's heavy. Like, this is heavy. I opened the thing up. I was like, what is this? It was like they had taken two normal records and just like pressed them together. Incredible. So the 180 gram. And then I got Paul Simon's Graceland, which is an album that we would listen to on repeat on road trips through the country, which is a pretty good road trip album. Like, it works.
On cassette?
Yeah, I usually had a cassette or CD, or like we had the CD because like CDs had just, it was early 90s. I think this was one of those. He had to buy all his favorite albums in CD, and that was one. And that one was, so this one was clear. It was clear vinyl. So this is the other thing, are these like colored vinyl albums that are coming. So I don't know. I don't know what to make of them. Yeah, just some trends. If you're buying
the industry stuff. Knows what to make of them.
Yeah,
profit. I believe that's what they're going to make of them.
I know.
Oh, Matt. So the other day, I got a phone call, and I get phone calls. I don't know if you. Hopefully, I can't wait for John Oliver's show to come back so we can get an update, in particular on the FCC and that jerk off with the really big, comically large Reese's coffee mug who runs the FCC, who is the reason you've been getting all these spam phone calls for the past 4 years. Hopefully, he has been dispatched.
I don't know anything about this. This is a John Oliver thing.
It's a John Oliver thing. There is a jerk face who has taken pleasure in deregulating telephone stuff, and so that's why you have been getting.
But my car insurance is about to expire, and so they're just calling to give me a courtesy call and let me know.
My extended warranty on cars that I have not purchased have been very close to expiring a lot lately.
Yeah.
So I got this phone call, like you get them, but it was from Pennsylvania, and I recently had some friends moved to Pennsylvania, and I was like, maybe it's my friends. Maybe they're in trouble. I should answer it, right? So I answer the phone call, Matt. And you're not going to believe this. Not my friends who've recently moved to Philadelphia. But it was a telephone call from the town council of Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, man.
What?
Yeah. It's that town. I'm sure you're aware. It's the town where Groundhog Day happens. It's got the groundhog that predicts the weather.
Yeah.
And this year, Matt, I don't know if you saw earlier this week for us, you know, Groundhog came out and saw a shadow, and that all happened with much fanfare. But this is the first time they've had to do it during COVID, right? During a pandemic, socially distanced, all on Zoom, a lot of issues that they needed to sort through. And they had heard that I've done some event planning.
Sure.
I've, you know, organized conferences and done all that kind of stuff. And they said, we want to talk to this guy because this year we want to really spice this thing up. We want to take it to the next level because this is a new chapter for Punxsutawney Phil, for the city. We really want to take it to the next level. And so do you have any ideas for what we can do to really set things up? And I said, I love it. I love what you love. I'm glad you called. You know, I think you guys should just go for it. And as you can tell, they stuck with the groundhog.
Wow.
No gophers.
What a setup. What a setup. He didn't even workshop that happy hour. He just went straight on the pod.
I'll just wait till tonight, Matt.
Incredible. Wow.
Thank you.
I'm looking forward to you starting your stand-up career.
I can't wait until I can stand up in public.
Started reading W. Kamau Bell's book. So we'll see him talk about his experience in stand-up. And I just kept thinking about you, Zach, because I know this is your lifelong calling.
Oh, it's my passion. So, my passion.
Absolutely. Well, let me tell you what else we've been up here in Los Angeles. You're going to love this because I know that one of the things that's most important to you is Sunday school. It's just really, really
love it.
Critical.
Without Sunday school, the church will fall.
My daughters are at the Disney Princess stage, and they know all this lore about Disney princesses. They ask for an Otto Holland hairstyle, which is the place where they go in Frozen 2.
Is there a barber there? I don't remember.
They often ask Chris to do their hair like different, like it looks in different part of the movie. It's a whole thing. They're obsessed. And I thought they need to learn some of the Bible nerd stories. Like they need to get into the lore. You know, like they're not even going to know about it.
They should listen to the podcast Lore. It's really pretty good.
What can I do? So I bought myself a subscription to who is not yet our sponsor, but should be after this after this segment where I just bought myself.
We should redact. Nick, go back and redact the part where he says because they have not yet cut us a check. Even though one time they promised to cut us a check and they didn't. But please continue, Matt. I'm sure they'll come through this time.
We started using the digital version of the Holy Moly curriculum.
The Holy Moly? Have you seen the show now?
No, it's not that show.
It's really good show.
It's not your mini golf show. This is their one of their curricula for little kids. And we do. So I set up my own homeschooling curriculum. It's going to be for the next 4 months. We spend 30 minutes a day. We do the little 5-minute video. They are incredible. I love them. You actually will love this. So one of Chris's complaints, we started this Sunday school at St. Mark's by popular demand, and it's going well. I don't have to do anything with it, which is the best, right? So that's great. But Chris's complaint was that too often we try to find the moral lesson. It's like, what's the moral lesson of this? You know what? Mm-hmm. You should share. And she's like, I don't like the lesson of every Bible story is like we should share and like get along. I mean, it's been good to get along. Okay, like that's a fine thing. Mm-hmm. But like, is that really the? So I was like, well, let me see if I can find a different curriculum. These stories have no moral lessons. It's just the story. It's incredible. I love it. We just did Jacob and Esau, who are also twins, like my daughters. Ooh. They kept asking all these questions, like, why do they keep playing this winning game? Why does this guy always want to win? What is going on? And then at the end of it, Esau's just mad, fade to black. That's the end of the story. There's no moral lesson. It's not therefore. It's incredible. I love it. And so we have done 4 stories so far. We did Abraham and Sarah. We did Rebecca and Isaac. And now Jacob and Esau. And it's just great. And none of them have a moral lesson. It's like God shows up and like promises these old people a kid, right? That's the story. Like they're really sad, and then they color them. They're like black and white, and then they color them in. It's very creative the way that. But there's no moral. It's just kind of like God shows up and does this strange thing, and then people are like happy, and it's interesting. I just like it's great, and I'm loving it. It's fantastic, and I stand by it. I think homeschool, Sunday school, it's going well, Zach. It's going well.
Where in your life do you have the time to develop a 4-month home Sunday school curriculum?
I don't develop it. I'm using Sparkhouse's curriculum. I just space it out. So we do four. We do Monday through Thursday every week.
Wow.
I did the math, and we should be able to get through all 60 stories by the end of May. That's my goal.
60 stories. Good luck. Yeah. I mean, sounds great. Good for you. I don't think I could cajole or convince my daughter. I mean, I've tried to like do her online school stuff and it's gone quite poorly. So I'm jealous. I'm glad. Sounds great. Map out this terrain for me, you know, report back, scout ahead.
I just knew I had to. This is a podcast about the Bible, ostensibly.
Yeah.
So I felt, and I know that in church publishing houses, so passionate about children's education that I had to bring it up.
I continue to sincerely want, you said you're going to set this up, Sarah Sumner Eisenbrun, to come on, because I'm genuinely want to know, right? I want to talk pedagogy, right? Because that's what you're bringing up, like, as an actual, like, issue that I certainly was never taught in my singular seminary class on quote unquote teaching, was what's like the pedagogical principles, which is the nerdiest, most on brand way for us to say this, right? What's the point of a children's sermon? What's the point of doing Sunday school, right? Is it because no one ever tells you what the point is, and it feels like the point is to come up with like a little moral at the end of it that you should be nice and stuff. And I don't think that, I mean, I agree, right? Like, I love how excited you were that these stories did not have a moral, and that there's an ethical ambiguity, to the Christian tradition.
I think the point of it, at least at this age, and again, I don't know much about youth ministry. I'm not the Synod Youth Director for the Southwest California Synod. I don't know that much about
my condolences.
But I feel like at this point, it's just learn the story, right? Like, yeah. And here's the thing. Like, I mean, we could argue about whether or not that's important, but they're going to learn stories one way or another. I love Star Wars. I love all the intricacies of what's going on this planet. Chris hates it. I love it. It's a whole thing. I love Marvel. I love getting into the whole Marvel cinematic, you know, what's going on with this person. My daughter's Disney princesses. They're just what's going on with this one and this one and this one. They're going to learn stories. How about these be like some of them? Because they, as we talked about in this podcast, some of them are pretty good. We get some pretty like terrible lectionary Sundays, but some of these stories, like, what in the world? Like, these are great stories, and it seems like there should be some way to tell them to kids that would be fun, and just tell the story. That's it. Just tell a story. I'm not giving you a moral. Like, just tell a story, and then we wonder, and then we have like some discussion. Like, I wonder why they did this. Like, what? What was that about? What do you know? And it's like a fun, and it's not very long, 20 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
It's, so that's what I think. That's my argument, Zach. That's it.
I like it. I believe it. I mean, it's the, I want to somewhat sincerely have a conversation. I mean, that's what I assumed it. I mean, nearly all Christian education should just, at this point, with the kinds of people that I see at least, and in my community, should just be about biblical literacy because we don't have that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I tried to use some curriculum from one of the worship series we were doing. They put some like children's lessons together, but there was no Bible in it. And I sound like a Christian conservative or something, but I was like, I don't need them to read like Little People, Big Dreams. Like, we're gonna do that anyway. But where are they gonna learn about Noah and the Ark? Like, where are they gonna learn the story? Like, this is the only place. They're not gonna learn at school, and that's fine. I don't want them to. I don't need prayer in the schools. But like, that's pretty much all I need. I don't need like a moral lesson about this famous person. I need just, you know, that's what I think.
It requires a little bit of this faith stuff. I mean, it's kind of like our the preaching philosophy that the Bishop Reverend Dr. Craig Satterlee put into our heads, that preaching requires a bit of faith if you're not going to tell people exactly what to do, but to trust that the promise proclaimed is enough for it to start to be manifested in the world, and that it actually works better that way. It takes a little bit of faith to say these stories are actually good enough, like we can trust the stories, like, and that if we just do a really good job of telling the stories, they have power in of themselves.
Yeah, and there is a space, right? Like, as you know, working with young adults, like, there are other spaces where we can tease it out, where we start to tease out together, okay, what are the implications of this story? But, you know,
I think the best answers, right, are like, if you looked at this episode of the podcast from the right angle, it looks like we are conservative Bible-believing podcast hosts. But I think some of the best answers to write, like we're going to do a course here, a 6-week course coming up on Christianity, like why Christianity. Our group right now is not super religious, but they show up and have some affinity to our group. So let's like start to like talk about the Christian part of our identity and group. And mostly, you know, it's going to be driven by their questions. And I think the best response to their questions that aren't going to be about the Bible is to tell Bible stories. Because for the most part, the kind of answers that I feel really confident giving are nuanced and have depth and mystery and all that kind of stuff. And these stories do a lot better job of proclaiming that nuance and complexity and mystery than the straight quote-unquote straightforward answers that I come up with.
Well, and the thing is, the more you actually dig into the Bible, you realize how incredibly weird it is, right? Like, I know we're not doing Jacob and Esau this morning, but we just did the story, and I'm like, this is terrible. Like, these two brothers, they just fight their whole lives, and then the mom just takes a side and, like, tricks her husband as well, and then it just ends with Esau being pissed and Jacob running away. The end. I don't know how you get either a moral lesson or Jesus is the way out of that. I don't know how you get either one of those two things. I don't know what, like, eventually this story might add up to something when we start to talk about Jacob's character and all that, but, like,
there's no justice for Esau.
You know? I mean, they're just, they're weird stories, and the weirdness is, you know, it invites us deeper.
Well, Elisha is pretty clean cut and not weird.
Yeah, let's see. All. Let's
Matt,
see.
I have one question, though, before Kings. We move on. Have one question before we move on that has to do with lore, not so much the Bible, but here's my question for you on Thursday, February 4th. What do I need to know about Mephisto?
He hasn't shown up in WandaVision yet, has he?
No, but all the YouTube videos are like, whoa, it's clearly setting up Mephisto.
I mean, I guess he had a role in this particular storyline when it played out in the comics. I don't know. He's the actual devil. He showed up in, like, a Black Panther storyline, and even in the original Thanos Infinity Gauntlet storyline in the comics, he was a part of that. The actual devil. Yeah, that's really all I know.
Maybe, Matt, we'll have to do a crossover episode with God Loves Geeks, because I think, Matt, when we're having the literal devil introduced to the MCU, and I think there's parallels to be drawn here about future church and, like, phase 5 of the MCU rollout. I would like to see future church segmented into phases of... you know, like, I want to get excited for the new Dr. Elisha movie that's coming up.
Oh my goodness. Well, Chris only agreed to watch the latest episode. She was about to give up on WandaVision. She agreed to watch it. I said, look, Randall Park is in this
He's
episode.
So good.
He's great.
So good.
She goes, okay, I'll watch it if then you watch Always Be My Maybe with me, which I had not yet seen.
Had you not seen it?
I had not seen it. It was great.
It's good. FYI, Matt, music related, the Randall Park's band's album is on Spotify.
What?
From Always Be My Maybe. Tennis ball, bounce back. Like a tennis ball, bounce back. Any kind of ball except a football.
Hello, Carol. Good stuff.
Listen to the band. Well, Matt, we have some very straightforward, not weird text at all to talk about today.
Sweet. Second Kings.
Same as the first.
Phase 2 of Kings. When the Lord was about to take Elijah up to heaven by a whirlwind, because that's the way it usually happens, Elijah and Elisha were on their way from Gilgal. Elijah said to Elisha, "Stay here, for the Lord has sent me as far as Bethel." But Elisha said, "As the Lord lives and you yourself live, I will not leave you." So they went down to Bethel. The company of prophets who were in Bethel came out to Elisha and said to them, "Do you know that today the Lord will take your master away from you?" How did they know it? And they must have been watching the YouTube videos.
Words on the street. They found the Easter eggs.
He said, yes, I know, but you keep silent. Elijah said to him, "Elisha, stay here, for the Lord has sent me to Jericho." He's white fanging him. And he said, "As the Lord lives, and as you yourself live, I will not leave you." And so they came to Jericho. The company of prophets who were at Jericho drew near to Elisha and said to him, "Do you know that we got a triptych? Do you know that today the Lord will take your master away from you?" And he answered, "Yes, I know. Be silent." Then Elijah said to him, "Stay here, for the Lord has sent me to the Jordan." But he said, "As the Lord lives and you yourself live, I will not leave you." So the two of them went on. 50 men of the company of prophets also went and stood at some distance from them as they both were standing by the Jordan. Not weird at all. Then Elijah took his mantle and rolled it up and struck the water. The water was parted to the one side and to the other until the two of them crossed on dry ground. Wow, he's going to do the Moses thing, huh?
Except with his shirt.
With his shirt. It's a little more floppy. Just when they had crossed.
Really starched it. A lot of starch.
Right, yeah. When they had crossed, Elijah said to Elisha, "Tell me what I may do for you before I am taken from you." Elisha said, "Please let me inherit a double share of your spirit."
Give me that double, double.
Mm-hmm. He responded, "You have asked a hard thing. Yet, if you see me as I am being taken from you, it will be granted you. If not, tough luck." As they continued walking and talking, a chariot of fire and horses of fire, whew, separated the two of them. And Elijah ascended into a whirlwind in heaven. Elisha kept watching and crying out, "Father, Father, the chariots of Israel and its horsemen." But when he could no longer see him, he grasped his own clothes and tore them in two pieces. Word of God, word of life. Clear moral lesson.
The moral here, clearly, Matt.
Story. What a story.
There is no clear moral, Matt, but it's a hell of a story, man. Hell
incredible. Of a story. Incredible. It'd be a great special effects. I mean, you got the chariot of, oh, right here. Cousin to the water horse in Frozen 2.
Oof.
I'm telling, living in Arendelle. Just great. It's great.
It is, Matt.
What do you do with it?
You just tell it and you trust it.
You just tell it. You just tell it.
I mean, I think what it is, Matt, is so there's this literal passing of the mantle. From Elijah to Elisha, things you should not preach on is the likelihood that the smushing together of the Elijah tradition with the Elisha tradition is probably because folks couldn't agree that they were the same person, and one group of people was like, "This is definitely Elijah," and the other group of people were like, no, it's a completely different person who's Elisha. And so they have this story that kind of like marries them together, and from here, Elisha will go on to do a lot of things that are remarkably similar to the things that Elijah has already done.
It's a retcon. This is a retcon.
A little bit. But it does give a cruciform picture of what transition of power, transition of leadership, of what the path to new life looks like. That Elijah knows what's going to happen. And keeps going. You know, we get that three times. So you get the, which is both the rule of three works in comedy, and evidently it works in sad biblical stories. That Elisha knows what's going to happen, and yet he has to go and see it. And that, I mean, that's just like his. That's the ask that Elijah makes, that you can't look away. Which is really something. I mean, it just sounds, yeah. It feels resonant that you've got to go fully into the death thing in order to get fully into the new life thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the advice, yeah. It's not really advice, but what Elijah tells him that you have to watch, right, is kind of similar to my advice. I don't know who told it to me. Somebody told it to me, and I've taken it as advice seriously. And but especially with young adults, in college, maybe one of the first times that they go to funerals, right? Especially if you didn't. I don't know. I mean, growing up, I guess I went to a decent number of funerals, but that was a part of like growing up in a small church kind of situation. But sometimes I will hear from students like, "I don't know if I should go or not to the funeral because I wasn't like really close to the person." And the advice that was given to me that I continue to give is that if there's ever any doubt, you should always go.
Yeah.
If you think you might should go to the funeral, you should go to the funeral. Mm-hmm. And that I found that to be life-giving,
yeah,
advice. And it's been a really like a privilege. I feel very at times, I mean, not this closely connected, but maybe like the, I feel like a character in the story, because for me being connected to this like wider network of church people, I know lots of people. I get emails from all the conference churches. I'm on all of their email lists, right? So when like the thing comes up for a funeral, I always check to see if I know the person because they were a supporter or friend of the ministry or whatever. And so I end up at times going to a lot more funerals than you would expect for me. And lots of times they're for people who I wasn't particularly close with, who whatever. But I think it's good that it is life-giving in this cross-shaped way to not avert your eyes.
Yeah. The way that's played out for me more recently is I got this message from a number of, I feel like it came a lot from young adults that were like, I didn't want to reach out to you because I didn't want to like bother you in your time of grief, right? Like, and you get, and I'm really like sympathetic, but but then when it happened to somebody like that they knew, and I just like reach out, like you should just send the text or make the call, and if they're busy they won't pick up, you know, they like it's fine, but always make the call, like just like you know, like there's no downside to saying that you care about someone, right? And I'm not saying that because I'm mad, but I think there's always this temptation to just be like, oh no, I'm gonna, you know. Part of it is respect for the person, but I think there is also a part of it that's like, I don't know what to do with this, you know? Like, I don't know what to do with this weird thing. They keep trying to tell Elisha, do you know this thing's going to happen? And he's like, but he keeps going. Like, he sticks with him and keeps his eyes open. And so, yeah, cosine.
It's like Voldemort. Like, we have Voldemortarized death, you know? Because... I was writing some cards today to some folks who've, you know, tell them that I was thinking about them, that somebody had died. And I consciously wrote, like, that I was so sorry to hear that this person died, right? Mm-hmm. Versus, like, I could have written what I wanted to write, you know, kind of like this same, like, spirit that's in these prophets, that's in Elisha, was to be, like, so sorry to hear about Tony. And then keep going, but not say what happened, because I don't want to. I want to, like, there's a strong cultural emphasis to not name the thing that has happened, to look away. And this, here in this story, is this, for us, deeply countercultural. Like, no, you need to see, you need to know what's happening here.
Yeah. And what a powerful thing as we, you know, as we'll move into the gospel in a moment, but. As we move toward Ash Wednesday, which will be the Wednesday after this Sunday, right, where we do not look away from our mortality. What a transitional Sunday. And we even get it here in 2 Kings.
Transitional, transfigural.
Transfigural. Shall we talk about this transfiguration?
It's a transfiguration there, Matt. So I guess you're right. This Wednesday is coming up on Ash Wednesday. I have not prepared. We should maybe talk about Ash Wednesday.
It turns out
we do it every year. I don't have anything great to say, except that Tim Brown's wrong about.
Well, I have thoughts about it.
Okay,
let's
fantastic.
Let's do this gospel. And then
We do. We have a hot conversation to take. Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John, the sons of thunder, and he led them up a high mountain apart by themselves. And he was transfigured, which is not a word we normally use, before them, and his clothes became dazzling white, such as no one on earth could even think to bleach them. And there he appeared to Elijah. Perhaps you could brief in that. His clothes became dazzling white, such as no filter on Instagram could bleach them. And there appeared to them Elijah with Moses, who were talking with Jesus. He had a Zoom meeting. That's why he had to get up there. He had to get to this thing. And then Peter said to Jesus, Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. And he did not know what to say, for they were terrified. Who did not know what to say? Then a cloud overshadowed them, and from their cloud came a voice that we heard earlier on in Mark. This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him. And suddenly, they looked around. They saw no one was with them anymore, but only Jesus. And as they were coming down the mountain, he ordered them to tell no one about what they had seen until after the Son of Man had risen from the dead. This last line here, Matt, until the Son of Man had risen from the dead, is a helpful clue that orients this text. We are in the Gospel of Mark at the tipping point. Everything is changing now, and things really started to change in Mark 8 at the end of the last chapter, because that is where, for the first time, someone who is not a demon sees Jesus for what Jesus is. Jesus says, who do you say that I am? And Peter says, you're the Messiah, the Rabbi, the Son of God. And Jesus says, well, the Son of God, I'm going to be tortured and killed, and after 3 days rise. And Peter rebukes him, and then Jesus rebukes Peter's rebuking, and then they immediately go up on the mountain. And so it is this, like, the vision that Jesus is given, the clarity of who Jesus is, which is a stark contrast to everything in those first eight, against all those things in the first eight chapters, which is a Jesus who's healing and feeding, super miraculous, super cool, life-giving dude. And then, by the way, the reason I'm here is to die, and there's nothing anybody can do about it. And then this, right, is to transfigure it, right, to say this thing that you think is death, this thing that you want to avert your eyes from, because that's what Peter was doing, right? He was looking away. No, this can't be true. I don't want to hear it. Jesus says, no, this thing you don't want to look at, that is the thing that is bathed in light, that is on high on the mountain. Look at it from a different angle. It's see the same thing in a different way. Cross-shaped, you know?
Yeah. Amen. See this thing in a different way. It's, life-giving and cruciform. Are you saying it's both and? I feel like this is a both.
Well, here's where my critique on both and would be with this perspective, Matt. It's about the elephant, right? Perhaps the elephant, are you familiar with the elephant? Not a joke.
No.
Sometimes it comes up in interfaith circles, right, that it's the story that, like,
blind men and the elephant?
Right? Like, right? And people will relate. The person who feels the ears is, right, one of the religious traditions, and they're just feeling different parts of the elephant. But that assumes, right, that somebody can see that it's an elephant. Right? Like, that somebody has the privilege, whoever's telling the story has the privileged position to know that, it's just an elephant. Like, you're just seeing different parts of the same thing, which doesn't give, like, respect or integrity, like, doesn't honor anybody's, the particularities of someone's traditions and, like, just lowest common denominators it into a feel-goody, moral elephant, basically, right?
You don't think the elephant story is helpful?
No, I do not think it is.
No?
I think it's actually harmful. Yes.
But the elephant, like, it assumes that all those other parts, all the parts of the elephant are equal, and none of those people can actually see the elephant. So it's a third person narrator. So it's just assuming that there's some, like, truth that is beyond all of the humans, period. So, like, you can call it an elephant in the metaphor, but, like, if you translate it to the non-metaphor, it's just, like, this thing that we can't even, like, that no human is going to wrap their brains around. So I guess if you used it to argue, like, that's all just different parts of Jesus, then it'd probably be problematic. But if you're like, it's all these different parts of this ineffable reality that we can't really...
I hear you, Matt. Like, the metaphor in its own, in a vacuum, works, right? But in interfaith dialogue, I mean, that's an atmosphere where the kinds of people who are attracted to that very quickly want to find similarities and paper over all differences. And so, like, it can quickly be like as a mainline Christian, right? Like, we're pro interfaith stuff. I want to have great relationships with, my Muslim, my Jewish, my Hindi, my Buddhist, friends. The quickest way to do that is be like, look at all these things we have in common, versus, like, there are actual things that are meaningful to our traditions that we do not agree on. That actual, like, interfaith, like, respect and community comes by understanding and respecting those differences. So a metaphor where somebody comes in and says, it's all the same, is rarely helpful. in those conversations.
Yeah, I mean, so you've got to have a particular take on it. It's too easy to take it in an unhelpful direction, I guess, is the push. Because in epistemology, like, we would always talk about, like, oh my God, we'd have these dumb back and forths. I just found it so annoying. Because we'd be like, oh, it's either relativism and there's no truth, or there's truth. Which one is it going to be? And I'd be like, this is so stupid. Like, clearly, there's some truth that none of us have full access to. And so we just have to live this, like, relativistic reality here. But that doesn't mean that there isn't some truth that actually exists somewhere out there beyond all of us. And that's all that to me would be the statement. There's just some, like, you know what I mean? Like, there's some reality out there that none of us have access to.
Yeah.
And so our different experiences are going to be radically different. But that's not to say that there isn't, like, we're not living in a maybe we're living in a multiverse, but even the multiverse is a multiverse. Like, you're still putting it in a noun, singular noun. But you're saying you've seen it go off the rails pretty quickly.
And it's most likely that a mainline Protestant is the person who's going to use that metaphor, right? Like, and it's going to be a white guy, right? Like, you're all reaching, I mean, like, yeah, this is where we expected this episode to go. Yeah, you're all reaching into this thing that you cannot see, and your experiences will be different, and they will not necessarily, like, if it's an elephant, right, and I reach in the same box you reached into, I'm seeing a mystery box, right? Like, we could, like, there shouldn't be any conflicting stuff, right? Like, an elephant's an elephant, right? Like,
no, but not the way to tell the story. Like, they're like, in the story, they, like, can only
no,
get the certain
this is
parts.
A giraffe. There's a giraffe. It's definitely a giraffe. Who gets to decide it's a giraffe or an elephant, right?
Right.
Anyway, yeah. Matt, similarly, right? All that's to say, the way I'm trying to apply this metaphor in a helpful way is to say that there is a mysterious element to the holy, to the truth, to the life that we think is cross-shaped. That is the horns on our giraffe. And that there is an element of it that is always and will always be mysterious, so that sometimes you can be certain that it looks like life, and sometimes you can be certain that it looks like death. And even though those are very opposite things, they are both true experiences with the elephant that is Jesus.
Mm. Yeah. Ash Wednesday. Should we talk about how Ash Wednesday fits into that? Because that's where
Please.
We're going. They're going to come down the mountain.
Ash Wednesday and pachydermes. Pachyderms.
Into the cross, into the reality of the cross. Here's my dilemma, Zach, because we have, I mean, mm-hmm. how many years have we been doing this podcast and talking about Ashes to Go versus, and then we went off on Tim Brown because we only like to do it when he's not in the room. Maybe he did it when he's in the room, though. So that was cool. Here's what happened to me last year, though. I did the Ashes.
You used hot
this
ash,
is, this was
didn't
pre-pandemic.
You?
Pre-pandemic. So we could still, I could still physically touch other humans.
Rub people's faces.
With their consent. But nobody came to the service. Like, they all opted for the Ashes to Go.
An Eleanor Rigsby situation.
What?
Father McKenzie preaching the sermon to words that no one will hear. No one came near.
To
Man,
fair,
I just found my new song for the playlist. This is definitely an Eleanor Rigsby.
Put it on there.
Nobody comes
fair,
to her funeral.
Were,
yeah.
To be fair, there were two families that came. But I was like, this is, wow. So, like, nobody. So we've all now opted away from, like, having any kind of community gathering on Ash Wednesday. And we're just doing the Ashes to Go. And then we were talking about again this year, how should we do it? And obviously, like, I could talk through some logistics, like we talked about doing like a drive through and people can pick up their ashes, whatever. We'll see if I actually want to do that. But I was like, this is the choice now. It's like, does everyone have an individual experience? Because they were like, then they can still, like, see you and have that. I'm like, why do they need to but I always have a low opinion of a low view of pastoral authority. But each person is going to have their experience of me, so we'll have one-on-one time, which is great. I always value that about Ash Wednesday, but there will be no experience of people with each other, which is just, and I'm not sure what I think about it. I'm just saying, wow, this is a new dilemma that has evolved over the last few years. And I'm just curious, is that okay? That it's just going to go in that direction? Should we just stop doing a service that nobody comes to? Should I say, I'm not doing the to go because I want you all to show up together. I don't know. What do you think, Zach?
I wonder if you could see it as a pendulum. Are you familiar with a pendulum? There's an old metaphor we use in interfaith dialogue about pendulum. Just kidding. A part of what you can see in the development of the liturgy is, I mean, so why, one of the differences, I'll talk about ecumenical life, when I worship with Episcopalians, the Episcopalians I hang out with versus Lutheran folks, when folks do confession forgiveness, Lutherans do it at the front, right? The first thing you do. It's like this appendage onto the front of it, and then the service starts. Whereas Episcopalians do it right before the peace, which is actually nicer, I think, because it's more fully integrated, and the peace comes after this, like, forgiveness, like, for yourself and for one another. But the reason, developmentally, that the confession and forgiveness is at the front end of Lutheran liturgy is coming off of the Catholic tradition of needing to go to confession before you could go to Mass. And so in the olden days, you went to the church on Saturday night to do your confession so that on Sunday morning you could take communion. And that became too much of a pain in the ass. And so people, perhaps convenience, but also, right, to de-emphasize the importance of individual confession versus communal confession and forgiveness, there is this swing as, I believe it starts to happen in the red book, like the service book and hymnal, that it becomes, confession forgiveness becomes the front appendage of things. It's this movie. You could see it as a moving away from an emphasis on individual confession to communal confession. And I hear in this movement towards Ashes to Go, also tied up in convenience, perhaps, is a movement back towards individual confession, which as a socialist makes me, moving away from communal right to individual right makes me a little queasy. Or cautious, not queasy. Other things make me queasy.
Yeah. So what should I do?
As a consultant, I can't tell you what to do, man, but I can invoice you and give you hot takes on what to do. You're going to do, like, in-person things in person?
I am not sure, but I didn't plan ahead far enough to try to, like, mail out. We've never mailed anything during
mail
this whole
dirt
pandemic.
To people?
Yeah, like, people are doing that, but, like, I don't have a system. I don't have an assembly line to go mail a bunch of boxes to people.
Dirt.
Like, I would be doing that myself, and I don't do BreadX like some folks
do. It's like the time
do.
I got sent finger paint by the church.
In history. But I do think there would be some, I don't know. The suggestion that was made by the worship team, which was a good suggestion, I don't know if I'll do it, would be to do some individual little cups with ashes that people could pick up. And I usually would sit outside anyway on Ash Wednesday morning, so I could do that. Mm-hmm. Folks could pick it up. Or folks could impose their own ashes right there, 6 feet away from me with the table. You know, like I could control the space. And so folks could either do it right there, or they could pick up their ashes and then we do a Zoom service later that day. Although nobody expressed interest in coming to the Zoom service, so I was like, here we are. So
I wonder if, yeah, Matt, that I think there's an important communal element to the imposition of ashes. And if folks, our listeners, are not fully up to date on the writings of Timothy Brown, Tim Brown, you know, said not to do, came out against ashes to go. And the response that I gave to him that I liked was that when I've done ashes to go, nobody wants them. Right. And that with my Episcopal friends, they want to wear. And so we've worn cassocks, just black cassocks. And I walk around campus like a Death Eater. Right. And so that my presence was, the line that was really pretty good that I wrote was that my presence on campus on Ash Wednesday in and all administering ashes is in of itself ashes on the forehead of our community. I think that helping place the individual thing, which a lot of people are super into, you know, it could be like one of those really popular things that people want to have happen, placing that within a context of how you place ashes on the community, on the forehead of your community, is, I think, the place where there's some opportunity that doesn't have to happen, I don't think, in a, like a Zoom community worship thing, but like, as you all have done so well, creatively thinking about the space and the neighborhood, but also maybe your community on the internet, I suppose. That sounds gross, but I don't like it, but you know, that's my encouragement. Put ashes on the building, blacken, darken. It's a thing, again, my Episcopal folk do, like during Lent, like they cover up every cross in the church. And like they veil them, like quote unquote veil them, that at first was kind of a weird thing to me, but now as I think about it, like, I mean, that's, you're making this like marked change, for, that's unavoidable.
Yeah.
You can't avert your eyes, Matt.
Right. Yeah. 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 And we haven't done anything in the actual space. I don't, yeah. Well, and then I'm wondering long-term. I mean, this is going to be a weird year regardless, but I'm wondering, maybe I need to move it away from me imposing. Like, people can impose ashes on one another. Yeah, there's nothing that, like, that's not a...
It's not a sacrament or
It's
anything.
Not baptism. Even with communion, like, sometimes we'll pass it around, right? Like, it doesn't, like, I don't physically have to... I might be the person at the table, but, like... So people could... Maybe we need to... It's always just like, we're going to get a special... That's the other thing people do is they go, I want to get my blessing for Ash Wednesday. And I go, is there... I mean, I guess it's maybe
there
to like
is a
be
blessing.
Honest. I'm going to be just brutally honest with you, and then maybe there's blessing in that. But I'm basically just going to tell you you're going
to
die. So
if well, if you go to the etymology
to you,
of blessing, it means bloodied. So...
oh. So, I don't know. I don't know. There we are. But there's the dilemma. There's
I don't know. I can't wait to find out what you do.
That's future church, Zach. Future church. Evolving.
Is that phase
right
one
in front
or phase
of our
two?
Eyes. I don't know.
I see a few vision of the future church, Matt. In the year 2000, the church will be a delivery service akin to Amazon Prime for delivering small packets of dirt, finger paint, and pre-consecrated elements.
Yeah. I'm not...
I was really thinking sometime this week, Matt, because I don't have time to develop curriculum or write segments for this podcast, of, you know, a Conan O'Brien-inspired vision of the church in the future in the year 2000 to make fun of future church. But, you know, like the Doctor Who vision of the church in the future is that priests are soldiers. Like that happens a couple of times that the priests have become or all soldiers are priests now and priests are soldiers and the church is the army. I like to think of vision of the future in the year 2000 future church. The church will be Amazon Prime.
Incredible. Amazon Prime.
What are you listening to on Amazon Prime Music now? Free subscription for 3 months.
Oh, my goodness. What am I listening to? Well, so I've been planning this Sunday, Transfiguration Sunday, as a Black History Month celebration, but also a youth takeover. We don't ever do, like, the youth Sunday thing, but after a while I was like, hey, you guys want to take over a Sunday? Let's do a Black History Month thing, and they were super into it. So,
does that mean the whole service is on TikTok?
It's not, no. I still don't understand
TikTok.
Is
your church on
like
Parler yet?
Oh, gosh. Oh, no. Oh, no. But as we were planning, back on track, as we're planning this Transfiguration Sunday, Black History Month, Youth Sunday, Tyra Dennis jumped on our youth ministry Zoom for a quick consultation and recommended that we do a mashup of This Little Light of Mine and Kanye West's All of the Lights. And I don't know how it works, but Tyra can clearly see it. So I'm in Tyra I trust when it comes to most things, let's be honest. So Kanye's All the Lights when we're thinking about this transfiguration and shining. And
you know,
then,
Matt, these Jewish space lasers have had me really rethinking This Little Light of Mine.
oh my gosh, what is even happening? Fun fact, Wisconsin's legislature voted to repeal the mask mandate in their state. That's pretty fun.
Cool.
Amazing.
We're all good.
Don't. I could also go off on my Gavin Newsom hot takes. Next episode, we're gonna do it.
Oh man, next episode's gonna be pretty eclectic, but hot.
Black Pumas band nominated for some Grammys. They're the indie darling of the moment, but I really like their song "Colors," which is the single, and it seems feels like it fits this Transfiguration thing too. No one on earth could bleach them. I like to say dazzlingly bright, in addition to dazzlingly white. Also, again, been listening to way too much Frozen, but thinking about that fire horse, the fire horses in Elijah,
yeah,
and the water horse, but also thinking about Jesus. I mean, if this is an emo version of the Transfig, you just imagine Jesus just hears that voice, and he's going up there to that mountain, and then here's his big musical moment. Show yourself. Step into your power. There he is.
I feel like, Matt, the Bible would catch on a lot better if we went through and created a version where instead of tunics, they were all wearing spandex. Because, you know, this Elijah story is very comics-ish, you know, and comics are in right now. So I think, you know, the crappy, like, Sunday school art of Bible characters in loose tunics would be way more exciting if they were in spandex.
Yeah.
Matt, there is no artist that I more associate with perhaps any holiday in the church than Sufjan Stevens in the Transfiguration. He just feels like Transfiguration. You know, like especially that whole, I think of the performance he did on Austin City Limits with the whole like massive band that were all in like butter, like had wings on and stuff. He has that kind of ethereal feel sometimes. And about seeing things differently. It's lovely and perfect for this transitional time. But I'm going to go with the one he has a track called The Transfiguration that is about the Transfiguration.
We did it last year on Transfiguration Sunday. I had a couple of young adults do it. It was great.
Nice. I'm also going to put a new release from Julian Baker, who is a part of the group that sometimes plays together called Boy Genius that involves best friend of the podcast, Phoebe Bridgers and Lucy Dacus. She got a new song out called Favor that's really nice and is really, I think, it's about like a friendship and like the ups and downs of friendship and stuff. The title comes from a line that says, I used to think that I was just a really good liar, but it turns out all my friends were just doing me a favor and playing along with her lies and stuff. And you had no right to save me, that kind of stuff. Like, so there's a lot of this, like, you're together or you're not together. I mean, that's a whole other angle on both these texts we didn't hit, was like that, you know, they're together, then they're apart, and all these people are here, they're not here. So if you want to play with some of Carolyn Vanderwerf's imagery from last week of isolation and community back and forth, you get more of that meat to chew on the bone. And finally, Matt, we have come to the conclusion of Elijah's time in the Bible. And so I can only imagine as those horses, the chariots of fire burn in up in the heavens, the clouds part, and we see another vision and transfigured before us, our boys becoming men. Their name is a transition, Matt. They're going boys to men in Roman numerals. It's a part of the Roman Empire. It's against the whole backdrop. No song is perhaps tied in as best as End of the Road. It's the end of the road.
Wow, you really hit those notes. Good.
Yeah. Oh, and I'm sticking Eleanor Rigby on. It's Rigby. I mispronounced it. I said Rigsby earlier. Because Father McKenzie's writing the words to a sermon that no one will hear. No one came near because nobody came to Eleanor Rigby's funeral. And Elijah, the Lord through Elijah, is saying, do not avert your eyes. You need to go to Eleanor Rigby's funeral. Title of this episode.
Incredible. Incredible. Good stuff. Good playlist. It's been real.
Good app. Real vinyl.